very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are down, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here. We are 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host Matt Barros. The NFL continues on, even the offseason. They're down in Orlando, I guess, right, for the owners' meetings. Neither one of us are there, but we are monitoring very closely. So much that Barros started this conversation before we started recording. Hey, what do you want to talk about? So, there's tons of stuff to talk about. John Lynch spoke to yesterday. The Brandon Ayuk situation came up, obviously, and other things. Kyle Shanahan, a little less groggy than usual, but maybe still a little groggy, spoke early this morning, also addressed the Ayuk, as is typical. I thought Kyle was much more direct about it, much more kind of like, hey, this is what we want. I want him to be re-signed. We expect him to re-sign. John Lynch, as the chief guy, kind of has to equivocate a little bit. Barros, anything surprising, anything revelatory out of the comments from either John Lynch or Kyle Shanahan about the Brandon Ayuk? Obviously, he's coming up on his fifth year. He's going to want an extension, and there's been some, obviously, rumbling, social media rumblings about his unhappiness with the state of play and his emojis after John Lynch's statement yesterday. Where are you on where the 49ers are on the Ayuk situation?
I mean, it's exactly what we're all expecting. You've got John Lynch in the morning was trying to kind of calm the waters and say, listen, we've been in contact. We haven't gotten any trade queries about Brandon Ayuk. We're actively negotiating with him. Everything is going according to plan. Ayuk comes in with his emojis, which were, I was told, I had to explain this. It was money talks and bullshit walks. So he's reacting to Lynch. This is modern everything. This is how you negotiate now. You're not happy. You're always agitating to get it done.
You're negotiating for your new deal with on 49ers Plus Minus. It was all poop emojis. I was trying, like, seven poop emojis from Barros. What does that mean?
It was inscrutable. Yeah, I meant to do that. I just want to keep the tension on you, Tim, about this whole thing. It just kind of shows you where you are. I mean, we all think that this is eventually going to end with a long-term deal for Brandon Ayuk. It probably won't be until late July or August, which is when the Deebo Samuel. I think that, you know, of all these deals that have been done in recent years, the Deebo Samuel one is probably the best comparison, because they're both wide receivers and they're both willing to make things ugly for the 49ers and put pressure on them. Whereas George Kittle, Fred Warner, Nick Bosa, well, Bosa held out, so he did that as well. But just sort of the stuff that we're going to probably have to deal with in April and May and June, which is a lot of kind of discontent and trade me and stuff like that, all designed to put pressure on the 49ers to step up to the plate.
Yeah, and I just said, I mentioned Shanahan. He's more direct and said, listen, if you got a quarterback like Brock Purdy, you want to keep his receivers. And we all know that Ayuk seems to be the one who has the most chemistry with Purdy. Purdy is a huge part of the future of this franchise. And for Shanahan to put it like that, again, it has people like me, which is important, you know, not just me, but everybody, saying, "Wow, they're going to do everything possible to keep Brandon Ayuk." That doesn't mean that they know the dollar amount. That doesn't mean they know when it's going to happen. But I think, again, we'll see during the first round of the draft. But if they don't trade him after that first round, once that first round is done, he's still a 49er, then they're not trading him. And then it's just a matter of negotiation, probably hold out, all those things. But when Kyle talks like that, we know he's a receivers guy, right? This is a guy that he coached hard and has seen the benefits from, and has seen him, you know, flourish, especially with Purdy. I just can't imagine Shanahan saying, yeah, let's trade him. We'll get some rookie receiver for him. And who knows, maybe in year three, in 2026, he'll be really good, right? I mean, I just don't see that in Shanahan's mindset. So I think that guides, as we know, like, you know, Lynch and Parag and Jed and other, like, they kind of do the structural things. And Kyle is the kind of the, here's what we got to really got to do right here. And I just don't see that working that way. I might write about this eventually. Probably should write about this eventually. during the Debo thing 2 years ago, I had heard for sure that there was a chance they were going to trade him. Like the 49ers and Debo side were kind of like really unhappy. There were, had been some general terms exchanged, and that was philosophical. That was whether Debo Samuel was going to be a really good player for 3 or 4 more years. And when you pay long-term money and a big bonus, you have to amortize it believing he's going to be really good for 3 or 4 years. And they weren't sure about that. And they told him that. Somebody did. I don't know who did on the 49ers. At least that was communicated to Debo. And that's what really pissed Debo off. Like, you're not one of the great, you know, you're not Tyreek Hill. You're not A.J. Brown. You're not going to get one. And he really did not get one of those deals. He got a great deal, but much shorter term. I think because he was small, because he had some weight issues, because he had some injury issues. That was the philosophical loggerhead that they were in early with Debo. That's what really caused the tension. That's not the same with Ayuk. It's just not. Like, he's their size. He's been durable. He's not been hurt that, you know, right? You know, like, these things that they can account for that you would want a receiver to be over a long term. He checks all those boxes. Now, that makes him valuable, and so maybe another team would want to pay him, but I don't think that kind of philosophical tension, I know it doesn't. It does not exist with Ayuk. It's just a matter of money terms. It's not the same. Because I do think they thought about trading Debo. I think they really did. Now, how close they got to it, I don't know. But like, I was told that night of the draft, like, they could do it. I don't think they're going to get there with Ayuk. We shall see. Time will tell. But I really don't feel. You can tell me if you think, you know, I'm overstating it, but do you think that is a plausible way this unfolded? It's just not the same amount of tension. Now, they could ratchet up, social media being what it is, and the amount of poop emojis will have to be accounted for. But I just don't feel that way, at least the way the 49ers are looking at it with Ayuk as opposed to Debo.
I think you're right. I mean, I think there's a potential for a sort of a fracture point with this where, I mean, is Brandon Ayuk one of the top five elite wide receivers in this game? You know, the 49ers could say, you know, we think that he's fantastic, but we don't think that he's, you know, the top of his position. And they'd probably be right in saying that. I mean, he's a great route runner, but, you know, is he breaking, you know, through really tight man-to-man coverage in the Super Bowl, all that stuff? You know, I think that that could potentially be a disruptive point. You know, but you're absolutely right. There were more things to the Debo Samuel negotiation than there will be to the Brandon Ayuk. It was just more complicated. He's a different type of guy. I can see why Debo was so steamed. Here he was coming off that remarkable 2021 season where he was it. He was the reason why they rebounded in the second half of that season and they nearly went to the Super Bowl. Remember, this was before Ayuk became Ayuk. It was before Christian McCaffrey was here. It might have been a year that George Kittle was hampered by injuries. Everything was pivoted on Debo Samuel that year. And then they come and tell him, you know, we don't think that you're going to be good long term. He's justified in getting a little bit ticked off for that. But yeah, I agree with you largely that I just don't see the time bomb, the explosiveness that the Ayuk negotiation could bring versus what the Debo situation did.
Here's another thing. That sort of happened with Debo. There just wasn't an offer out there that was valuable enough for the 49ers to do it, right? That his value to them exceeded, you know, flipping 1 and 2 with the Jets is what the Jets, you know, they wanted to flip their first for the 49ers second, and you know, might have come out to like the equivalent, like the 20th pick overall, whatever it was going to be. Ayuk similarly isn't a breakaway receiver, right? He's not a guy who runs away from defenses. He is a great, you know, possession, maybe intermediate, then, you know, make break a tackle, get that 45-yard thing. But he's not running down the sideline a nine route and you just bomb it to him. Those are the Tyreek Hill got paid for that. A.J. Brown, not a super speedster, but he's a blockbuster, you know, receiver. He just runs through people. those tend to be the guys who get the huge deals that get traded for ones and high ones. And I've said this over again. Ayuk's value to the 49ers, since they don't go deep that much, I'm sure they would like to, but they need that intermediate receiver much more than the deep thing, is more than I think another team will trade for them. I don't know that some team's going to trade a top 14 pick for him, because you could draft somebody and not have to pay him. And I don't think he's getting 20. And again, this might be aggregated and sent to Ayuk, and I'll get 144 poop emojis sent to me directly. I don't know. But I don't think he's not getting Tyreek Hill money. He's not. He's not getting, you know, A.J. Brown money. That's just not there for him, because he's not that kind of receiver. I think he's incredibly valuable. I've written it. I think he's so valuable to Purdy. But I don't think another team's going to say, let's give up the top, you know, a top 15 pick, and we know we have to turn around and pay him $24 million a year. I don't see it. That doesn't mean he's not incredibly valuable. It just means in this marketplace, I don't see that the things lining up that would get the 49ers to trade him and him to get that $24 million. Because once you trade a first-round pick for him, you have to pay him, right? You have to. Every one of these trades has been accompanied by a large deal. So there you go. There's my take on Ayuk. I figure Shanahan would be more direct about it. Felt like it. Now we see if they get through April and he's still on the roster. If they're through April and he's still on the roster, this thing at some point will come to a head and he will be signed, or he will be holding out deep into the season. I don't foresee that happening. All right. Anything else from Shanahan and Lynch that struck you?
Well, just on that note, I do remember Debo coming in and being present for some of those spring practices in May. So that'll be if we get through the draft, that'll be the next thing to see whether Ayuk is skipping those altogether or whether he's there, because that sort of was a signal early on that, okay, Debo is in the building. He's hanging around his teammates. This is going to get done at some point. So we'll watch out for that. The other thing to watch out for this next month is which 49ers are the 49ers looking at? There have already been reports of them, at least scheduling visits from a lot of guys in the second and third rounds. Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky, Jerry Rice's son, both of those guys are due in. That wasn't happening 2 years ago during that period where the 49ers were negotiating with Debo. And so you could sort of draw a line and say, oh, okay, the 49ers are looking at wide receivers. They are thinking about moving Brandon Ayuk. I think it's more related to what happens next year and maybe parting ways with Debo Samuel, that they might bring in a second round or a third round receiver this year who takes over that role in 2025. This guy, Malachi Corley, I just mentioned, is, you know, he gets all sorts of Debo comparisons. He's the yards after catch guy. He's a bull in a china shop when he gets the ball in his hand. So, if the 49ers drafted him, I mean, the questions immediately would be, okay, what does this mean? Not for Brandon Ayuk, but for Debo Samuel in 2025.
Yeah, I just can't see them. We know Super Bowl or bust, Super Bowl or bust. This team is beyond desperate to win a Super Bowl. And then to flip out Ayuk for a second round receiver and say, okay, we're just as good. In fact, we're even better. You know, now we're going to beat the Chiefs with a second round pick as our number one or number two receiver. I can't see Kyle Shanahan doing that. I mean, I can understand some of the deeper logic of it, but I couldn't see it. Like, you know, can you imagine if they trade Ayuk for a second round pick? Now, you know, listen, some guys have gone for less than I thought they were going to go for, you know, the cornerback going from Kansas City to the Titans. I figured that guy was worth a first pick for sure. And he goes for what, a third, like a third and a fifth, whatever that was. But we'll see. I just think the way this franchise is thinking, yeah, if they take a receiver in the second round or even a third round, it's going to be eventually to replace Debo, I would say, if possible. Or dare they dream to replace Danny Gray, if that's possible. Can you get one reception out of him in 2 years?
Yeah, well, how are you going to make up those 7 yards that he accounted for in 2022? I mean,
let's add the league thing. They made this dramatic vote to drastically change kickoffs, where, like, you cannot kick it out of the end zone anymore, or you can. It's, what, going to the 40, I think? Or at least
no, 30.
30. Okay. No, I think 35, I thought. whatever.
They moved it back to the 30. They amended that. Yeah.
So certainly strongly encouraging the ball to go in, you know, pop it up from like the 10 to the goal line. And you have to return those. You can't fair catch those anymore. But obviously moving the lines very close to each other, so you're not having these high speed contact. 49ers were one of three teams that voted against this, Matt Barrow. So I was a little surprised by that. I don't know if it was a Jake Moody's great at these kickoffs. We need to maintain his value. I don't know what. I think you might know. Why did the 49ers vote against this?
Well, I corresponded with Jed, and he's the one who voted. And I said, why did you vote against it? And he said, it's such a big change. I mean, this is one of the biggest changes that the NFL has had in a long time, that he thought that it just merited more research, and that he wanted to put it off until the October meeting. And then obviously it would be, a 2025 thing. But he just thought that it was too big of a change to the game, warranted more research about, you know, possible injury repercussions, about competitive type of things. He said he wasn't against change and against this rule per se, but he just wanted more research done. He submitted an amendment that would have kind of put this off until this fall. But he had to have known that it was he was in the minority on this one. And, everybody seems to think that this is going to be great for the game. I think it's something like only a little over 20% of all kickoffs were returned this past season. And, it's also a play where a lot of people get injured. So you have this weird thing. It's like, it's almost a throwaway play, and yet guys are still getting injured. The idea with this new rule is that you address both of those things. You don't have these long spaces to build up speed anymore, and you're encouraging returns. So they want returns up, over 80%. They want 80% of these returns or these kickoffs to be returned. And so teams are going to have to adjust to that. And so it's interesting about what the composition of guys is going to be like. Usually you had a lot of DBs, safety types, cornerbacks on those kick return units. Your guy, Chris Conley, was on there. And I just wonder whether you got a shorter distance for those types of guys to cover, whether you're going to have bigger guys there now, whether you put some of your defensive linemen, whether you put some of your offensive linemen as part of the return unit. So I imagine that this helps the 49ers because they have a kicker who's good at placing the ball wherever he wants to. And they've got mobile offensive linemen who are good on the hoof. So I would think that, the 49ers should be thinking, we're one of the teams that can really kind of take advantage of this new rule.
Yeah, I saw David Lombardi tweet that also, like, you could see in crucial situations, Debo back there. Now, Debo has been kickoff return man sometimes, but usually the ball's going out of bounds, going over his head, and he's not returning it. But he's returned some in very crucial situations. You might even see McCaffrey, because it is kind of like an open field play with blocking. It's not just a wild open field play. It's like a power sweep from, 40 yards away. I could see that, absolutely. You do add wear and tear on two of your best guys, but that's also, you want the ball in those guys' hands with a chance to get around the corner and take it deep. And I think they saw in the XFL, it's one of the reasons they like it, that they saw some big plays out of this, because it's much more like an actual play from scrimmage. I think you're going to see a ton of linebackers. Like, well, wouldn't you just want linebackers on the field? Because you don't want to give up the edge, yet you want guys who can tackle. And I just think that's linebackers. So maybe a couple of linebackers, or, Jalen Graham is up instead of down on the 53, on the 47, whatever the hell. 46, whatever, how many guys they have on the active roster during games. Just because I think you're going to need that pursuit, because there's going to be some, we know how terrible the 49ers kickoff coverage was when the ball did go in. Like, they might need to beef that up with guys who can tackle and guys who can keep the edge. Because I think the edges are going to be really in danger. Like, you're going to have this group of guys kind of funnel to the middle, and then somebody's going to pop around the edge and just go. and there's not going to be a lot of second. Like, there's nobody who's laying back, right? Who's the safety in that?
The kicker.
I know. Like, this is going to be
Moody.
Very interesting. Yeah. Jake, you know, like, Jake Moody, get your tackling shoulders on. I just think there's going to be some interesting combinations. And I don't think, again, I felt it during the Super Bowl, because guess how many kickoff returns were there were in the Super Bowl?
Zero.
Like, no chance. Like, the ball is flying out. Indoor arenas, for sure, it's where, like, you know, perfect conditions, the guy just nail it off of perfect grass, and you have no play. And, you know, for the 49ers, that wasn't bad, because they're a terrible kickoff coverage team, and they weren't a great kickoff return team. But this will add some of this. We'll see if they're better with it. We'll see if, you know, this is somewhere where Ronnie Bell, you know, could be better. This is somewhere where someone, you know, some of their other players could be better. But I like it. And again, I'm usually like, there might be some problems to this, unintended consequences. I don't see it, other than there might be some big returns broken off, and maybe the 49ers will have it against them. But too bad. Be better at it. That's football. I also think there's going to be fumbles. I just think there's going to be, like, quick change, you're spinning around, you're trying to stay up, and then there's five guys around you knocking at the ball, and these guys aren't going to be running backs who are used to protecting the ball. We've seen some of these return guys, the ball's flying out of their hand. I think there will be – I'll just mark this down, record it forever in posterity. I think there's going to be a ton of fumbles, which is kind of fun too. Like, this, it makes it exciting play. Anything else, Barrows, from – let's just say from Shanahan or Lynch – that jumped out at you? They talked about Staley. They talked about some other things.
Yeah, well, Shanahan noted that Daniel Bullocks tore his Achilles during the Super Bowl. And not only tore his Achilles, he tore it in the same way that Dre Greenlaw did. It was basically jumping up and down after a play and then tears the Achilles. He's an ex-DB. He has some mileage on him. But the 49ers are very suspicious of where they practiced that week. On that very kind of spongy UNLV turf. Remember, that was such a big deal when they initially got there, and everybody was tearing their hair out over it. And they tried to tamp it down once they realized there was nothing that they could do. But they think that turf might be the culprit behind Greenlaw's Achilles tear. Now you've got another guy who was on that turf all week dealing with the same issue. They may be just kind of mad and putting two and two together there, but I thought that was sort of interesting what he said. He talked about Sorensen, the new DC, and how he thought about hiring him in that role last year. Didn't think he was quite ready. He had only been with the 49ers for one season at that point. So, didn't have a terrible amount of experience in this specific defense at that point. And then went with him this year. So I'm writing on that topic. I don't know when that's going to drop, but I got some good stuff about Nick Sorensen and who he is, what makes this guy tick.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, going back to politics, it makes me wonder. I wonder when that happened, and did that in any way affect their way the defense played? You know, he's one of their main assistants for Steve Wilks. He was in that game. And if he's on a torn Achilles, was he not on the side? I don't know the answers to these things. But
yeah, he was out there the whole game.
But in some pain, I imagine.
In some pain and not very mobile the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, they had confusion, right? They had some confusion late. I wonder if any of that could have been part of it. Who knows? We're going to be hearing about that spongy field at UNLV for a long time, and that's fine. Like, if it was NFL screwed that up, 49ers have every right to bring it up, as at least in context of what all happened. Sorensen, Staley.
Here's the Super Bowl. Is it New Orleans this year?
Sounds right.
If they make it to New Orleans, they're going to send out like their own grounds crew like a month ahead of time. Make sure that Tulane stadium is perfect for them.
No question about it. On Sorensen and Staley, I just listened. I didn't hear what Kyle said about Staley specifically. I did hear what John said about him. And anyway, you think this might have been John? Kind of like, I think, you know, John might have been the Kocerek guy, like go wide nine a little bit, because, you know, Lynch is such a defensive personality, maybe has a little more input on defense. do you think that Staley thing might have been a little bit from John Lynch? I mean, I'm sure Shanahan agreed with it, but he's such a Seattle 4-3. That's the system. I know Fangio is somebody that he likes a lot, but which is a different kind of system, which is Staley's system. But do you think Lynch maybe was encouraging the Brandon Staley, just kind of like new ideas, take a look at some things?
Yeah, for sure. For that exact reason, sort of that Abraham Lincoln team of rivals idea, where you have a cabinet where, you know, you don't want a cabinet where everybody thinks exactly the same. You want a cabinet where you've got different ideas and then you challenge one another. But yeah, just getting a different set of eyes on things. I mean, the narrative coming out of the season is that, boy, Steve Wilks was just a bad fit for this defense. But in Wilks' defense, just playing exactly like the 49ers had in previous years wasn't working. Their whole idea was that, you know, we're just going to do what we do best and we're not going to make a lot of adjustments. What we do well, we do so well that we don't have to tweak it. And that wasn't the case. I mean, that's why he was calling zero blitzes and sort of oddball things, because the 49ers stock defense wasn't working. So I think that bringing in a Brandon Staley is designed to address that. What sorts of things can we do that aren't anathema to this defense, but can sort of help it? Because there were times last season that it was sputtering, for sure. And I think bringing in a Leonard Floyd is going to, you know, help that quite a bit. I really think that he's one of the kind of the three big offseason maneuvers for this team. Him, Sorensen, and Staley are the three big defensive changes that this team is making, and they needed them. That defense for long stretches of last season was stale, and they need to have some tweaks.
Maybe was it Staley? You're stale and you get Staley. There you go. Freshen it up with Staley.
There you go.
I don't know if Shanahan was asked about this specifically today, but all focus on still tackle in the first round in the draft, you think?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if, you're talking about number 31 there, and they're looking at some of these wide receivers who are going to get drafted early in the second round. So that makes me think that, boy, they are definitely looking at wide receivers. If there's one that they fall in love with that they don't think is going to be there in the 60s when they're picking in the second round, it would not bowl me over if they took one right there. And then that guy becomes the guy who takes over for Deebo Samuel in 2025. I know there's a lot of listeners out there that are just banking on that offensive lineman coming in the first round. And that's probably what's going to happen. But I'm just saying, you might want to gird yourself for a different scenario.
That would be worth a lot of columns and stories if they do that, because it would be you didn't get your tackle and you drafted somebody who might replace Deebo Samuel. And you might piss off IU somewhere in there too. That would be the move to most agitate. Well, there would be others like take a quarterback or something, but they're not doing that. If you take
a kicker in the first round, would
there you go. Punter, go punter this time. That would do it. And hey, listen, we know them. They can zigzag a little bit. I just think it's just so set up for them. They did not sign the tackle in free agency. They signed Colton McKivitz to what looks like a starting guard salary, if you ask me. It just seems to fit. Again, they might not have their tackle, or they might not figure out how to get they might need to use it, you know, try to get to 24 to get the guy they really want, and they can't do it, and so maybe things change. Some of that I get. If they're going to do that, they should trade back. If they're going to not find their tackle at 31, you shouldn't reach for a receiver or whoever else. That I would disagree with just on value. Go back into the second, pick up another second-round pick maybe, and then you get your tackle and your receiver in the second round. Just taking a receiver at 31 – barring that receiver being great, who knows? What was Ayuk? Was 24, I think, right? So, you know, if there's another Ayuk at 31, I would understand that, I guess. But I don't think that's happening. And I would think that would be poor value. I think that would be like the equivalent of taking what that Joe Williams, who was a running back that they drafted.
And yeah, it was fourth round. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. It's just like, oh, we got to get this guy. We just do whatever. We got to get. Don't do that. That's how you screw up. Play the value game. And I think the value, I've said it too many times, maybe it's no longer the value, is maybe throw in a third round and try to get as high as you can in the first round. And you can move up a couple spaces with a third rounder late in the first. You can't do it early in the first, but you can do it late in the first. Throw a third, throw a fifth. I know they've already, you know, have some draft penalties on the on that overpay. By the way, I was trying to look up, who do you think got the $75,000 extra payment? I guess it wasn't. I thought it wouldn't be hilarious if that was Garoppolo. Like, because apparently that guy, they wouldn't give it back, right? That player would not give it back.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, that would be Garoppolo if I had
it. Well, I think that's any player. Who's giving back $75,000?
I guess so.
But
and
yeah,
it probably was Garoppolo because I looked it up and I don't think he had any $75,000 bonus. But I just thought, you know, we know the way this ended with the 49ers and Garoppolo. And if during COVID they overpaid him and that's the guy that cost them a fifth round pick next year and has a, you know, whatever draft slot this season, it would have been hilarious. And maybe you would have heard muttering from the coach's office about that for a long time.
That's,
it probably wasn't him. Don't
assignment.
Aggregate this. Don't aggregate this. I'm not saying that's true. I just thought it would have been hilarious if it was. And I tried to look it up. I tried to look at some other players who might have had it. I couldn't tell. You know, it's hard. Sometimes those, you know, those game bonuses are tough to track down from the past. But that's a, you know, it's losing a fifth round pick is not nothing, right? It's not. We know the fifth round picks they've had. I'm sure they are not happy about losing a 2025 fifth round pick over some accountant, right? That's it really screws them up when it's not a football thing. It's an accountant who screwed it up. But hey, whenever anybody wants to pay me $75,000 an error, I will give it back. I promise you. Just pay me the $75,000 and then I'll give it back.
Like remember back in the day, this was probably 2006 or seven. They got docked a fifth rounder because they were accused
tampering, right?
Something tampering like with Lance Briggs.
Yep.
And I forget the exact ins and outs of it, but they contacted Briggs or Drew Rosenhaus or something like that when they shouldn't have. And some shenanigans were going on there. But they, you know, that was sort of a more serious infraction. And the penalty was a fifth round pick. So you're right. I mean, fifth round pick is a big deal. You know, the 49ers are also upset this cycle. They thought they were going to get another third rounder as part of the comp formula. And that ended up being a fourth rounder. And so they don't understand. They went back to the league and talked to the league about it, about why that was a fourth instead of a third. So yeah, I mean, losing a pick, being docked or, you know, sent down around or a few slots, all those things add up. The 49ers have been taking it on the chin on that the last couple of months.
Oh, the Lance Briggs. I remember, I think, who that was pointed towards. It's somebody who's still with the team. So I'll just put it that way. I think. Don't aggregate me on that one either, but it's somebody still there. So, oh, God, those were the days, Barros. Those were the days when it was wild and woolly inside 49ers HQ. It was crazy. So, all right, I think we've gone through enough.
Well, your assignment is to figure out who got this $75,000.
I think I'm going to figure that one out.
Figure out who bought a $75,000 automobile, like maybe like a BMW or something. At that.
God, this is good. Like that, when I saw it, I went, God, it would be funny to find out who that was. You know, who? It's somebody. I think of some semi. Like if you're not a really good player, don't you give it back because you're afraid they're going to be pissed at you? Like that's what my sense of it was.
Well, I mean, if you're not there anymore, if you're still on the team, but if you've been cut or something like that, I mean,
I guess so.
You gave me $75,000.
It sounded like it was pretty quick. Like they discovered it pretty quickly. Feels like it again.
And tried to get it back from the player.
Yeah.
And
so it wasn't like over a year. Yeah. It wasn't like a year later. I think it was like within weeks, I would guess. And wanted it back and didn't get it back. And like, I just feel like if you're a guy struggling to make the team, probably wouldn't have a $75,000 bonus paid to you, or at least one that they wouldn't notice. But you probably say, oh, yeah, okay, here's a back. I want to make $400,000 next season, whatever, you know. But who knows? I just, my guess, just right now, it's a pretty high-profile player who, you know, was a game bonus or something that was illegally, you know, because they had the COVID stuff, right? They had players missing games and the all host of things, and it just was accounted for incorrectly in this back and forth, if that's what we're looking at. And one player had a pretty good sizable game bonus and somehow it was paid out when it shouldn't have been. And that's who it is. That's my guess. I'll try to figure out who it is.
You think Jimmy Garoppolo had a sweet new pair of sneakers and that you're just connecting dots there. I get it.
Oh, I'm gonna get a call from his agent now probably for daring to throw out these terrible hypotheses. Just a hypothesis. Just me bumbling around on a podcast at the end of it. All right, Barrels, that's good enough. Plenty to talk about. We'll probably get back to you next week.
All right, sounds good.
All right, see you, everybody.